My name's Kevin. I'm a recovering addict.
Thank you, Betty. Betty and I were negotiating who was going to go first and how much time each of us were going to have. And I elected to go first and just introduce myself and then sit down, and she's going to take the 60 minutes. It's an honor to be asked to go any place. You know, coming from the place where we all come from, where what we have done, the lives that we have lived, and the kind of people that we were before arriving in Narcotics Anonymous, I know you understand when I say that it really is an honor. It's not an honor to be standing up here. It's not an honor to have somebody call me on the phone 2 or 3 months ago and ask if I would come speak at a workshop, because, you know, before I became a member of Narcotics Anonymous, I didn't get asked any place except, you know, step this way, put your hands behind your back, pee in the cup, all the typical things, the kinds of questions that we were asked before we arrived here. And you get asked that a little bit after you're here for a while, but if you stay here long enough and you get a sponsor, you stop getting questions like that. You know, I haven't been arrested in 15 years, and it's amazing. I joined Narcotics Anonymous a little over 15 years ago. I haven't been asked to pee in a cup for about 9 years. I was on probation for 6. But it's an honor to be asked to come here, and I thank the committee for asking me. I'm really the opening act for my sponsor, who came down from New York and is going to speak at the next workshop on Step 7. So I'm just here to get as a warm-up and for Betty and my sponsor. It's actually a promotion, though, because the last time they called and asked me to speak here was 8 or 9 years ago, and they said, you're the morning speaker. And I said, oh, wow. I felt pretty pumped up about it. And they said, you'll be speaking on the beach at 5:30 a.m. And so I guess 9:30 is a promotion. It took them about 9 years to get over that. My best friend showed up, so there was at least one person on the beach at 5:30 in the morning besides me. It was about 5 degrees and cloudy, misty. The fog hadn't lifted. It was an interesting meeting, but I was grateful to do it and, again, to be asked to go anywhere, do anything for Narcotics Anonymous. I really don't have any plan about what to share with you about my relationship with the principle of sponsorship. I do know one thing, that it is an indispensable part of the recovery program that I've learned to practice in Narcotics Anonymous. I couldn't live without it. I love sponsorship. I believe that without sponsorship, I know without sponsorship I wouldn't be clean. I believe without sponsorship, the fellowship really could not thrive and work the way that it does. I think it says that in the basic text someplace that it's the heartbeat, you know, the one act helping another, and sponsorship is the real heartbeat of how that works. It works in its most pure form through sponsorship. So having said that, I'll just tell you what my experience with sponsorship is. I first was sent to a place to try to get help. And you notice I didn't say I went to get help. I was sent someplace in 1972 to Second Genesis, went there for a while. Then I was in another therapeutic community for a couple of years, the places where they tried to put signs around your neck and change who you were through breaking down your personality and giving you a new one. The only problem was whenever I left those places, I had a worse one than when I had arrived. So, and I didn't have a plan either. I didn't have a sponsor. I didn't have a program of recovery. I didn't have 12 steps. So I kind of stumbled and fumbled through life again for the next 14 years until 1986, when I was introduced to Narcotics Anonymous. When I arrived in Narcotics Anonymous, I went to my first meeting in December of 1986. Shortly after that, I went to a halfway house in Winchester, Virginia, and after 11 treatment centers and numerous attempts at long-term, short-term, as long as 2.5 years and as short as 2.5 minutes in different treatment centers, I arrived at Narcotics Anonymous and got my first hug. And the guy who gave me that hug asked me if he could pick me up after the meeting. It was a noon meeting. Asked me if he could pick me up and take me to a meeting. He picked me up from the halfway house at 6 o'clock. He took me out to a prison meeting, which was great because here I was in a halfway house. I had one suit. That's all I owned. And Probably didn't own it. Probably was stolen or bought with stolen money. But I had a suit, so he said he's picking me up and going to my first meeting, so I figured I better put the suit on. So I put the suit on, and my buddy was in the halfway house with me. My later became my best friend and still is today. And he has some cologne, so it was probably some, you know, whatever was out then, Fahrenheit or something that you get. He got a free sample of. And I threw some cologne on, put my suit on, and this guy pulls up. He looked good at the meeting too. I mean, he had a year clean, which was about a year more than me. And he looked like he knew what was going on. He's going to take me to a meeting. I'm going to meet some people. This is great. He pulls up downstairs. I come bouncing out of the thing. He's got a jean jacket on and jeans. And he's in a VW Bug, about a 73 Bug, that has no front seat. It's got a milk crate in it. And I said, so this is what you get if you stay clean. All right. And he said, hop in. So I did. And he said, we're going to. I said, you take me to that meeting. I'm going to meet some people. He said, yeah, we're going out to Camp 7. The prison camp. And I, again, got less sure of my plan at that point about what was going on in my life. And we arrived at the prison camp, and there's old guy Billy E. who was speaking at the prison that night, some of you may know, and he goes walking in, and a couple guys behind him, and some girl turns around and says, who's that guy in a suit? And the other girl says, I don't know, he smells though. So that was kind of my introduction to Narcotics Anonymous. After that meeting, we left and went to a regularly scheduled NA meeting. He took me to an 8 o'clock meeting at a location in Winchester. And then from there, he asked if I wanted to, and really didn't have a choice, I didn't have a car, and I was 10 miles from the halfway house. He asked me if I would walk over to another meeting with him. It was an H&I subcommittee meeting. They were just getting the Almost Heaven area H&I subcommittee meeting started. It was the first subcommittee meeting. And so I walked over there and I sat in on that and I saw people talking about with passion starting meetings and how, you know, we want to do this and somebody else wanted to do it someplace else. And there was only enough resources for one meeting to get started. And there was a disagreement about where it should be and how it should be and what kind of format it was going to have. And I tell you what, I learned everything that I needed to know about Narcotics Anonymous that night. I saw that meeting attendance worked. I saw that it didn't matter what kind of car you drove. I saw that service mattered. I saw that it was okay to be passionate about something and not have it be drugs or self-gratification. I asked that guy to be my sponsor, and he said yes, so I saw selfless service. That night formed the basis for my being here today because it allowed me to see how Narcotics Anonymous works. You know, I was given a gift, and I believe that God works in my life the way that I need him to be present. And the basic text says we have different rates, different degrees of disease and different rates of recovery. Well, I was as sick as I could possibly be inside, and I needed everything that Narcotics Anonymous had to offer that first night to keep me here. And basically what happened was I asked him, he said yes, and my journey with sponsorship began. He gave me a step worksheet, I started writing on it, and we developed a relationship through writing on the steps. That's how I believe the best sponsorship relationship can be formed. It's great to have somebody to hang out with, but you can find somebody in NA to hang out with. We got a lot of people with spare time on their hands. But if you want to learn how to live and change your life, which is what he told me could happen, then you got to write on the steps and work the steps and learn how to live, I believe. And I did that to the best of my ability for a number of years with him. And what happened in that relationship was that it evolved into more of a friendship. But he lost touch with his sponsor, and we became good friends, and we hung out. And it transformed over a period of 7 or 8 years into something that was less than sponsorship. And I always had prided myself on not doing something and not saying something and not doing it myself. And I believe that, you know, it's like the old story about the guy who walks into the meeting, the newcomer walks in, and his sponsor says, all right, I want you to go to 90 meetings in 90 days. And the newcomer says, okay, and he goes to 90 meetings in 90 days. He says, you know what, I didn't see my sponsor one time. I don't want to be that guy. I don't want to be that way. I don't want to live. That's the way I lived every day before I got here. I stood up for principles all over the place and didn't live up to any. It, you know, it's the mouth will say anything, the actions don't lie, and I don't want to be a hypocrite. And that's what really was going on in my life, is that I was sponsoring guys, and I really didn't have a sponsorship relationship that I was using for my own recovery. And you can only give away what you have. So in turn, my life got less full because I wasn't giving much away, because I didn't have much. I wasn't getting much. And over the course of my life, I had made some poor decisions, again, because I was making decisions on my own again. And eventually, I backed myself into a corner that I could barely get out of clean. And I had gotten married to a woman who didn't have much clean time and was subject to make decisions that weren't as spiritually sound as I thought she should make. And there was a lot of conflict in our home. And I was in this relationship for 8 years, and I had two children, twins that were born. And I just didn't see a way out of that situation. I was trapped by my own decisions. And the reason that I was trapped, because you can make poor decisions in this fellowship. I make them every day. I'm living proof. But if you're on your own, you know the old saying, an addict alone is in bad company. And I was in bad company. I was trying to figure a way out of my situation. I was trying to think my way through, how am I going to fix this? You know, and I spent about 6 years trying to fix her. And then I spent about 2 years trying to fix me on the outside. You know, we had children, that might work. I got a house, that might work. I got a better job, that might work. Well, you all know the answer. No. It's 8 years later, the same problems that plagued me when I made the initial bad decision, the poor decision on my own to get involved in the relationship, was still happening. And it had gotten worse. You know, I think about the freedom that this fellowship provides and the choices we get to make. You know, it's like a buffet table. You can have as much freedom or as little as you want. You can go up to the buffet table and take a crouton and tiptoe in the corner and nibble on it, or you can jump on the table and get it all. And I had started my experience in Narcotics Anonymous, as I told you, jumping on the buffet table, getting it all, getting as much as I could. And all of a sudden, 8, 9, 10 years later, I found myself off in the corner nibbling croutons, just barely spiritually alive again. And as God would have it, I had a guy sponsored in Montreal, and he called me up, and he made me make a commitment to meet with him at a workshop that he had been asked to speak at, a 12-step workshop up in Pennsylvania. This is how God works in my life, and I believe through Narcotics Anonymous. That's the only way, that's my relationship with God has been shown to me. He asked me to make this commitment. I make a commitment to go to this recovery, 12-step recovery retreat up in Allentown, Pennsylvania. Well, for work that day, I have to go to Morgantown, Pennsylvania, and I'm thinking of any way I can to avoid having to go to Allentown. So I try to call him. He's already left for Montreal, so now I know I'm on the hook. So rather than get a map, I call up and ask somebody for directions, and they fax me directions. Rather than look at the directions, I just leave Morgantown and I start driving, figuring I know where I'm going. About 2.5 hours later, I ended up in Pittsburgh. And I finally pulled over when I saw the signs for Pittsburgh, and I said, well, how close is Allentown? They said, that's at the other end of the state, about 5 hours away. So now I had a great reason not to go. So I start driving home. And as I'm driving home, I'm thinking, I got to call this guy. This is, again, probably before cell phones or before I had a cell phone. And I said, I have to call this guy and I get home and explain, how am I going to call him at the retreat? He's going to be at the retreat. And all of a sudden, I see a sign that says, Allentown, 200 miles. So then I get back on the road to Allentown. And I'm thinking, all right, I'm going to go to Allentown. This has been a long day. And I'm heading to Allentown. I'm thinking, all right, you know, I need something. I'll go up there. I'm not thinking I need something. I think he needs something. And I'm going to go there for him. And I drive a little bit further, and I think, well, what do I even have to offer him? And I'm driving down the road, and says, Allentown, 120 miles. I said, well, I'm a couple hours away. Maybe I'll go. Maybe I won't. Let me see. I can turn off the next exit. And I look up, and there's a big sign that says, movies, adult movies, this exit. So I got off, hoping that I would find some direction there about what I needed to do. After I went into the adult movie center and emptied my pockets of all the quarters that I had, I felt a lot better about myself. So I got in the car and I said, you know what? I really am a piece of crap. I am worthless. I'm no good. All I can do is self-gratify. Here I am 10 years clean, and this is still what I'm reduced to, just looking to fix myself with self-gratification, time after time after time after time. And I just started driving, and the car just kind of ended up in Allentown. And I went up, and everybody was already, it was midnight, 1 o'clock, and people were in bed, and the ones who weren't were out together having coffee. And I just went up and crawled in my bed, and I cried myself to sleep about my condition, about my spiritual condition, about where the turn in the road that I had taken that had left me in this place one more time. And the difference was that when I surrendered to Narcotics Anonymous, I didn't have a clue. I didn't have any idea of what I was going to do or how I was going to get helped. I just had to ask God and have blind faith. But on this Saturday morning when I woke up, I was surrounded by recovering addicts. I went straight downstairs to the first workshop, and a guy is standing up at the podium, not unlike this. And he says, "Hi, my name's Steve. I'm an addict." And I listened. I said, "I've never seen this guy. You know, I know everybody on the East Coast." And he starts talking, and he says, "You know, he's doing a third-step workshop." And it's like it happened this morning. And I kind of did. But I can remember it as clear as that. He says, "You know, I remember when I was using, I would wake up and I would hit the street and I'd see Bobby. And Bobby and I would go off and then until we had a parting of the ways in midday, and I'd see Joe. And Joe and I would go off and then we were hooked up until Mary came along. And I was with Mary for 2.5 hours until I saw Steve. And then Steve and I would run around together until he beat me or I beat him." And I thought, man, this guy is telling my story. This is the story of my relationships with people. Whether it was using or not using, they were always doomed to failure because I was just looking for the next thing. And I just listened. And then, you know, when he got off the using part, it got scarier for me. He started talking about how he felt, and he had run that morning with another recovering addict, and he was talking about how it wasn't a competition and how they just two guys out there sharing some road time, getting some sun and enjoying life and listening to the birds, and it just melted my heart. And later that evening, I walked, he and his, a guy, he'd flown up from Miami for this workshop, and he had, they're getting ready to go out, you know, and I had about this much self-esteem, just enough, you know. God always leaves me just enough to do what I can choose to do. And I had a choice to go upstairs and go to bed and cry myself to sleep again or walk over to the car. And I walked over to the car and I kind of meekly tapped on the window. "You guys going out?" "Yeah." And of course they didn't say jump in, so right away I felt they don't want me to go. And I said, "Well, I guess you probably want to talk, don't you?" And he says, "No, we flew up on the plane together. We're flying home together tomorrow. You want to get in?" And that was it. You know, I got in, I sat, I listened, I soaked it up, and by the end of the evening, I knew I wanted this guy to be my sponsor. I knew that God had presented me with an opportunity to get through what I was in. And I immediately asked him. I didn't immediately. You know how we are. I said, "You sponsor a lot of guys?" How many times have we heard that question or asked that question, you know? It's kind of like the sponsorship flirt. "Come here often? Go to a lot of meetings, do you?" So I knew that he had what I wanted, and I just felt like God had put him in that third step workshop to open up my heart to do for me what I couldn't do for myself. And he said, "Yeah, I do, but you know," and this is, you know, I wasn't 10 years clean. I came from an area where the 10 years clean was the area was 11 years old, so you know what I'm saying. I didn't hear no much when I asked something, when I asked to do something in service, when I asked somebody to do something, and you know. So I asked him to be my sponsor that night, and he said, "No." And I said, "Okay." And he said, "But, you know, we don't have a relationship. If you want to start a relationship, I'm happy to talk to you. If it turns into something else, then that we'll know when that happens, and I'll tell you if you don't. So I said, so what are you saying? He says, well, you know, it's easy to ask somebody to be your sponsor. It's a whole other thing to develop a relationship. If you're interested in developing a relationship, I'm with you, you know. And what you have to do is call me, and we'll talk. Write. Send something. I'll look at it, you know. Do the work. That was my first introduction, reintroduction, to work in the steps. I started calling him. I called him that night from home on his cell phone at the airport, where he was doing a 12-step with Tiny Tim. That's true. Anybody who knows Tiny Tim, he was at the airport that Steve was at that night and got pulled over for driving an airport cart drunk. In any event, he became my, you know, 3 months went by and I asked him I kept calling, I kept writing, I kept doing the work. And one day I was getting ready to go to St. Louis World Convention. And he said, what are you doing? I said, I'm getting ready to go out. He goes, well, I just, you know that thing about sponsorship? And I said, yes. And he said, well, the answer is yes. I think that we've gotten there. And I tell you what, it was just like I just started crying on the other end of the phone. It was the most wonderful feeling that I've had a lot of wonderful feelings. So I don't want to put a number on it, but it was a great feeling. It was a feeling of safeness and security and peacefulness. And our relationship has blossomed from there. But I had to do the work, you know, and there's so many things that have happened as a result of that. The freedom that has occurred in my life. You know, he worked me through. He helped me through a process of getting out of the situation that I was in. He didn't get out for me. He didn't come and pack my stuff up. He didn't call me up and say, Kevin, it's time for you to leave your wife. You know, he helped me find my answer by gently encouraging me to seek it. You know, it wasn't his answer, so he didn't know if I should stay or I should go. But he had me do the work on me. He kept always reflecting back to me, what is it that you want? You know, what kind of man do you want to be? What kind of husband do you want to be? What kind of father do you want to be? And write those things down. We'll talk about those things. I'm not going to talk about your wife because I don't really know her and I don't have any interest in trying to help her. She should have her own sponsor if she needs one, but I'm yours and I'll talk about you all day long. And so sometimes we did. And eventually, through his support and some close friends and some sponsees' help, I left that house. And I tell you, I talk about that, and I won't go through it too much here, but it was the most painful thing I had ever to endure, because everything else I had done that was painful to me in using was things that were dulled by, the feelings were dulled by drugs or detoxing. This was with 10, 11 years clean, and I had to feel the feelings of walking out of my house and leaving two 2-year-olds who I had made a promise to. When they came in this world, I had promised God. I had given my word to them and to the God of my understanding that I would never not stand by them and never not watch over them. And the only way out of that relationship was out of that house. It had kept... Those children had kept me there for 2 years longer than I could really stand, and I was ready to use, and it became my sponsor, and the work that I was doing and sharing with my best friend, it had become clear to me that it was either get high or stay in the house, and I had to leave. And I did, and I did it with integrity. I didn't do it on the heels of action that I was compromising spiritual principles over. I didn't do it over a fight. I did it in person. And I said what I needed to say, and then I left. And it was a terribly painful experience. But, you know, I got through it. And part of getting through it was calling him up one day. I'd made all the calls I could. I was laying in my bed. I was sick. I was feeling just I was physically sick as well as just missing my kids so much. I felt like I had a hot poker in my heart. If I just moved, it just burned. It hurt so bad. And I lay there and I cried and I didn't go to work that day. And I was laying in bed and I called him and no answer. I called my best friend, no answer. Everybody's at work. And I was just laying in my bed sobbing alone. But it was a different kind of pain, you know. It wasn't that kind of hopeless pain, but it was that I was just feeling it. And finally the phone rings and it's Steve. And he says, how you doing, brother? And I just said, I'm doing better now, you know. And he says, all right, are you sitting down? I said, no. He said, well, go ahead and sit down. I said, okay. What? And he says, it's going to get worse. I said, okay. And I chuckled a little bit like some of you all did. And I thought, for a second, I'm glad I'm not paying for this. And then he said, and you know what? Then it's going to get better. But you got to stay here. You got to do the work. You got to keep doing what you've done for the past 6 months. You can't stop now. Now is the time where the wheat gets separated from the chaff, or whatever that saying is. Now is the time where we lose so many of our members because it's so hard to stay here when that pain is so fresh and vibrant inside of us. He said, but if you stay here, I promise you, it will get better. And, you know, at that moment, I didn't necessarily believe it would get better because I felt it was so intense and hurtful that it would never pass. But I did believe that he believed. And I trusted him. So I knew he was telling the truth. And I got through it, you know, and sooner than later, the children ended up coming to live with me. And my ex-wife started using, and it got bad for her. And they, you know, have gone off. She has gone off in another direction. But they're with me now. And now, as a result of the work and continuing to do the work, I have brought them with me for visual aids. That's them up here, for those of you who can see this far. And this is a new one that I have with my new wife. And that's just the way that Narcotics Anonymous works. You know, I didn't have any dream of having children, but then they came. I didn't have any dream of having them in my custody, but then that happened. I didn't have any dream of having another one and meeting someone after doing 2 years of work. See, one of the things he said when I left was, don't go out there and be the N.A., what's a prostitute word? Ho. You know, you can run around and be the social butterfly if you want, but if you want to work on yourself and take this time to dedicate it to your children and to find out what kind of man you want to be, you know, you'll get the benefits. If you desire companionship so much that you have to go out and find it, then just take comfort in one thing. There's somebody in the world having a cup of coffee right now waiting for you, but you got to have the eyes to see her. See, when I walked in the room, the first person that I had eyes to see, the only person that I had eyes to see was the person with the self-esteem low enough to look back at me. And it never worked. It wasn't their fault. I picked them because that's where my self-esteem was. I had to do the work to start feeling better about who I was. And then I did the work for a year or so, and you know what? I didn't desire companionship anymore. I had my two children, and I was fine. I was good to go. For the first time in my life, I didn't need somebody else to make me feel okay about who I was or what I was going to do with my life. I was complete in a way that I had never dreamed possible. And then, you know, just the way that it happens is that when I was complete, after doing the work for a couple of years, I walked into a T-ball game, and there was a beautiful inside and out woman of integrity who had eyes to see me. And I, having done the work, had the eyes to see her. So, you know, I feel like Narcotics Anonymous is the winning lottery ticket. But we got to cash it in, you know. It says in the fifth step, and I did my fifth step this morning with my sponsor. We went over a fifth step out on the balcony watching the sun come up and sat out there and have breakfast. I did a fifth step on my relationship with God that I've been working on. But it says in the fifth step in the basic text that this step is the key to freedom. It's the first sentence. And I've always been a firm believer that if it said this step is the key to winning the lottery, there would not be anybody in Narcotics Anonymous that hadn't done a fifth step, including me. You know, I'm not trying to point the finger. I confuse, and I think it's part of the human condition, but definitely the addict condition, material well-being with spiritual well-being. I think that if I can just get enough, I'm going to be okay. I think if I can just get the right car, if I can get the right woman, if I can get the right children, if I can get the right job, if I can get the right amount of money in the bank. And I had all those things with 10 years clean, and it just wasn't enough. I had a God-sized hole, and there was only one thing that was going to work for me, and that was to develop my relationship with God and find out about myself, fill that hole, and then surround myself with the other things, my children, my job, my wife. And I have a wonderful, loving relationship with her today. She's a person of integrity. I cried when I left because, you know, we have a six-month-old baby, and I didn't want to leave. You know, I knew I was coming to get some good stuff. I see my sponsor, hang out with my best friend, see sponsees, grand sponsees down here. I knew I was going to have big fun, but I still cry because I miss them. I miss my, missed the two that were in school, the one that I was playing with on the floor, my wife. That's just a blessing to be able to want to be with somebody so bad. You know you're going away to have big fun and you still are crying. I was crying when I left the house and I got in the car and I got here and I'm having a great time. This convention, this was my first convention. I went to the first one they had in Annapolis. And I tell you, the journey, the theme for that convention was more will be revealed, nothing more could be true. There is so much. I never try to predict anymore where I'm going to be in 6 months or a year or two or five or ten, because God has plans for me. As long as I show up here and stay a member of the fellowship, good things are going to happen. There's going to be some bumps along the way, and I've faced them, but I haven't had to face them alone by being a member of this fellowship. The trip I took down here 8 years ago to speak on the beach, I rode with a sponsee and my wife at the time. And it was probably the most painful weekend that we had. A lot of arguing, a lot of, you know, the ride home, my sponsee asked to get out of the car 6 times on the way home. We had to stop. And that's the truth. I mean, it's funny. I'm glad I can laugh about it now. Wasn't laughing then, because it was so ugly in the car because she wasn't living up to my expectations. And, yesterday I cried leaving the woman that I have found and sharing my life with. I have my children. They're at peace. This disease is arrested in them and is becoming arrested in me. I have a lot more work to do, but as long as I stay here and I continue to work with a sponsor, I got a feeling, I got a belief, I know I'm going to be all right. And I love you all, and I keep coming back.
Thank you, Kevin. I'd like to introduce Betty.
Good morning, everybody. I'm Betty, and I'm an addict. And this morning, as I was invited in June of 1983, I invite you to the miracle that I was invited to by my predecessors. And I always share that my sponsor reminds me that I didn't get chosen to be here because my God loves me so much they would never unchoose me should I decide this would not be a way of life for me. But what I did get was invited to the miracle by people who got here before me. And what I found by sitting my butt in a chair an hour and a day was the courage and the willingness to stay, that the miracle could happen in my life. And today I invite you to that same miracle as one of the predecessors and offer that if you stay and you follow suggestions, that the miracle can happen in your life too. And I have to share a funny story, and that is that 2 years ago I did a third tradition. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop using workshop. And afterwards, a young woman came up to me and said, I have to get your number. There's somebody, and it was her partner at the time, that you'd be the perfect sponsor for. No codependency going on there. and about a week later, I get this call on the phone, sight unseen, from this person who says, I have your tape, and I think you need to be my sponsor. and it's just amazing who God puts in your life, because sight unseen, I don't think that she would ever have asked me upon my outsides to be her sponsor. And I don't know that I would or would not have gravitated toward her to be in my network. Insanity prevailed. But she is one of my sponsees today, and I'm very grateful for that opportunity. And never, ever would ever try to determine what it's supposed to look like when it happens. But I will tell you that when I first got to NA in 1983, it was dangerous. We had the white book. We had 15 minutes sponsoring those of us who had 7.5, and we were giving out lots and lots of bad information. It was a tough time in Narcotics Anonymous. And I fortunately for me, was picked up by 3 people for a traditional 12-step call. And I always like to describe what I looked like when I got here, and that was big country western hair, no front teeth, broken nose, broken jaw, full leg splint, and a very expensive rent-a-car so that you wouldn't know that I was having problems in my life. And these people pulled up, and I had alcohol poisoning, and I was withdrawing from prescription narcotics because, you see, I thought because I had quit shooting dope 8 years ago on my own that I was I was well. And I stunk, and I smelled bad, and I looked horrible. And, you know, you've hugged people that are new in recovery, and they're just so rigid and so, like, I was one of those. I was like an A-frame hugger from a distance, you know. You just could not penetrate me or get anywhere near my spirit. And these people put me in their car, and I will tell you, they didn't talk to me, but they rolled down the windows because I smelled pretty bad. And talked amongst themselves, and I'm really grateful to those people today. That was little Marie B. and Carol J. and Paul G. And Marie is still in the fellowship and celebrating 21 years on her next anniversary. And they drove me to this NA meeting, and Marie was the speaker, and I really couldn't hear anything except that she thought she was an angel, because she was one of those green beans. And you see, I like to drink whiskey and shoot dope, so I wasn't making an angel. I'm a gangster. What am I doing here? You know, I wasn't making any connection, and it was hard. But the one thing that kept me coming back was all the applause that you got when you went up to get whatever it was they went up to get to celebrate whatever it was they were celebrating. I couldn't hear that either. And in my need for attention and affection, convinced me that the best way for me to get those same applause and all that attention would be to come back the next night and do whatever it is they did to get whatever it is they got to get all that applause and attention. And so, of course, I went home and made my hair even bigger and put on lots more makeup. Daisy Dukes up to the crack of my butt because I was getting that chip and all that attention. And I did that runway walk at the Thursday night Shot of Hope meeting in Bladensburg, Maryland. And I picked up that one-day chip, and I've been coming back ever since. And I'm really grateful for people who weren't frightened by me that first day when they picked me up and took me to a meeting. And I will tell you that for me, it was a scary time. We were borrowing from lots of other resources and recovery. It was confusing. People didn't want certain people in certain places, and others didn't want them in our place. And there were a lot of self-appointed physicians in NA who told a lot of people that they didn't need to be on this or that or this or that. And it was really a difficult time and a time of evolution and of growing and of a lot of growing pains and finding out, you know, how it is, you know, what our responsibilities are as members of the NA Fellowship. And from that, the basic text evolved. But in the interim, I guess, because I need instructions, and I didn't get it except come to meetings, don't use, and pray, which I had no idea what that meant. And that's when we still, to pick up a white key tag, you had to have, which was a chip at the time, you had to have an honest desire for a new way of life. And I couldn't connect with that at all either. And so I asked somebody to be my sponsor. And I will tell you, my first experiences with sponsorship and recovery were horrible. I would call this woman, and I would be telling her my deepest, darkest secrets to try to open up this incredible cement wall, kryptonite wall I had around myself. And her husband would be giving commentary in the background on my deep, dark secrets. That was really frightening for me. So we decided that wouldn't work. I decided that wouldn't work. There was no we about it for my first 9 months sitting around. And so then I asked another woman to be my sponsor. And through most of our conversations, she would always say, you know, I really feel like you sponsor me. And so that kind of left me feeling a little bit on the short side of that relationship. And so after about 9 months of doing exactly what was suggested not to do, I found after about 6 months, I got in that relationship with someone straight out of St. Elizabeth's mental institution. It was a match made in heaven. He had 3 months. I had 6 months. He was institutionalized, and that was perfect for me. And I finally got a sponsor who told me that, you know, two flakes make a storm, and I had a blizzard going on in my life. And it was. It was almost like the one of 79, believe me. And through a lot of, you know, and I love that person today. You know, that person is still in recovery, and I love that person today. And through the pain, you know, and I want to talk about, too, you know, the theme of this convention is awakening of the spirit. I want to talk about that process for me in relationship to the steps and my being a sponsor and a sponsee, and try to have it come together and make sense for you. But through the pain of that blizzard that was, I was calling a relationship, and the one I knew that God wanted me to be in, I was just sure. I almost died from the heartache, because I'd never gone through heartache without anesthetizing myself and medicating myself. And here I was, not only faced with me, but faced with this tremendous love hangover. And I don't care what you say, for me, they hurt worse than any dope sick or drunk I've ever had in my life. Because they're in here. They're 24/7. They're when you brush your teeth. They're when you don't eat or you overeat or you do this or you do that. And I was in a lot of pain, to say the least. And I was sponsoring myself because I had a lot of arrogance and a lot of self-will when I got here. And I finally, and this is my story, and I don't make apologies for it, but I finally was sitting in a recovery setting one day with somebody who just was a brutally honest person. And although I hated what this person said, there was something in me that kind of clung to it. And I understand it was the truth. I didn't recognize it at the time, but I understand it to be the truth. And I think I must have shared in a meeting where we were, and this man came up to me and he said, "You know, you got shit for brains." He said, "If you think you got a good idea, you better get a second opinion, because your idea's got you here and they're probably going to kill your ass." And I was like, "I love you. Will you be my sponsor?" You know? And then he said, "And any asshole can get clean. All you got to do is put it down, and you're the same asshole that walked through the door. And if you sit around, not work the steps, and try not to recover," he said, "you'll be the same asshole that walked in the door." And I said, "Well, when do we start?" You know? And this person had a lot of years and a lot of experience. And I asked that person to be my sponsor. And for me, I needed somebody, because I can talk circles around most people. I've always had command of the English language. For me, I needed somebody to look through the outsides, to look through the fact that I've never been unemployed a day in my life because I suffer from terminal self-reliance, and I equated that with recovery, which it doesn't at all, and say, "You're a dressed-up garbage can, and we got a lot of work to do. And if you want to change, you will work the steps, be of service, don't pick up, go to meetings, and help somebody else." And this person always reminded me that the new person, the newcomer, is the most important person in any meeting. It doesn't say, besides the one in your chair, in any of our literature, that's an NA myth. And as I speak, I'll point out NA myths today. Because as an old timer, I would be remiss if I didn't piss somebody off before they leave today by reminding them of what our literature does say and doesn't say, that gets perpetuated as the NA method in here, because it doesn't require any editing. It's the same thing about the 13th step. There is no such thing. Our steps are spiritual and God-centered in nature, and there is nothing about what has become the 13th step that is. That behavior is addressed in the 4th step. The end. If you are 18 and you come into the Fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous, you are a consenting adult if both of you decide to pull down your zippers and make an evening of it. The end. Take responsibility for your sexual behavior and your sexuality. Find out the exact nature in the 4th step. Share it in the 5th and do some work on 6 and 7. There is no such thing as a 13th step. Now, as an old timer, I hope that I've at least pissed somebody off. That's another NA myth. And when we say that that's the NA way and then we do the opposite, it doesn't kind of perpetuate, I think, the message of the literature or the spiritual principles. I worked with a sponsor for about 2.5 years, and then I found that I was kind of done, you know, with that style of sponsorship. I gravitated towards somebody who would be more empowering and a little more encouraging, I guess. But I needed that in the beginning. That's what I needed, was somebody to tell me the God's honest truth about who they thought I was and help guide me in the fact that I needed to do service. And that's how I would become selfless and less self-centered and begin to have humility and understand spiritual principles in my life. And so what I did was I went to do service in the jails in Upper Marlboro. The gift to me, which I could have never imagined, of carrying the message was a self-esteem. And it talks about that in our literature. As we become more of service and we express our any way of life in our gratitude and become selfless, the gift is an increase in our self-esteem, which helps us into the journey of our new lives and a new way of life. And what I learned from the first step is that in the first step, it's real important that I have somebody. Well, first, what I would like to share with you is that, you know, as a fellowship, we've evolved. And we've evolved to have our own literature and our own stepping work guide. And anyone who knows me knows that I like to thump this. I'm a working step guide thumper. Now we have our own working step guide to thump, which is pretty awesome. And that in the beginning of this book, I would just like to share, I also have an incredible attention deficit. And so one of the ways that I deal with that is to write myself notes so that I don't forget, besides the fact that I get incredibly nervous and I forget what I was going to say anyway. In this book, which I use, if anyone asks me to be their sponsor, what I ask them is, what is it that I have that you want? Think about that and let me know. Do you believe that I will tell you the truth in spite of the fact that you may or may not like me? My job in your life as a sponsor, in my opinion, in my experience, is not to be your friend. One, I've learned some very valuable lessons befriending people who I knew still had very sick behaviors. And very sick behaviors in their relationships. It can be incredibly painful to have somebody that you sponsor sleep with someone that you have been intimate with and knows all the details of your life. Incredibly painful. But what I learned from that, the gift from that is, when I bring a friend into my life, it's somebody who has worked on how to be a friend. Not somebody that I know still doesn't tell the truth, still okey-dokes people, still lives outside of the spiritual principles of recovery. Those are not the people I invite in my life today, whether I sponsor you or not. If a friendship comes, it's as a result of having done this work, not because you asked me to be your sponsor. Lessons learned, and a really painful one for me, really painful. It was excruciating to get that phone call. Excruciating, because I knew for me I could no longer be objective in the relationship and I had to let that person go. And I love that person. I know that they're sick, and they're sick in their behaviors. But it was excruciating. And I pray for that person, and I welcome that person when I see him in a meeting. It's not about me. It's really not about me. It's about life and death when somebody walks through the door, and that the only desire for membership is a desire to stop using, the only requirement. And this book, in the narrative part, before the questions, it's written in we to help you understand that this is our collective experience as addicts and members of Narcotics Anonymous. And then the questions are asked in the form of I, so that it can be your personal experience. And what I do is, the third question I ask somebody who asks me to be their sponsor after I let them know that I will love them enough to tell them the truth, and hopefully always do that, is, will you buy the Working Step Guide? And when you buy this, I know you're ready. And it says in the preface, it says that the guide is meant to be used at any stage of recovery, and that it was intentionally written to be relevant to the newcomer, but also to deepen the experience of people who have experience working with the steps, the old timers and the in-betweeners. And that as NA grows in numbers and diversity and lengths of clean time, so must our literature. Our literature must grow with us, or we will be left behind. I will be left behind. And when I say we, I try to make it something out of this. So if you should happen to notice that I don't, I apologize, then it's only my opinion. And it says there's only one inappropriate way to use this guide. One, alone. Ask a sponsor before you begin to use this guide. It's a simple instruction. The first question is 69 questions. It's not a fourth step. It's just about getting honest about your addiction and recovery and a desire and reservations and unmanageability. That's what it's about getting honest and doing that with somebody that can then share their experience with you on it. And it was suggested to me, which was a very humbling moment for me, by one of my sponsees, that perhaps, no, what she said to me is, have you written the answers to these questions? Well, you know, the book's been out for 2 years, and I've probably done the first step with people probably 15 times, all 69 questions, and I'm thinking, you know, I got a wrap on this stuff. You know, I know this, you know? and you know, I had to be open-minded, because it says, that's what we become, open-minded to suggestions. And I said, you know, I haven't, but I'll take it under consideration. I ran it by my sponsor, and I said, this is something I would like to do with you. My years don't negate my need, as the second step tells us in here, to write out the answers so that we become clear on the spiritual principles and the intent of the step. Step two in here helps us, I think, begin to trust and develop that relationship with somebody that we can trust so that we can begin to learn how to have relationships with other people. And in step three, it says to take this step with a sponsor. For me, I packed up every guide and piece of literature I ever could get my hands on. I drove to Ocean City. I sat down with my sponsor, and eight hours later, I walked away from that meeting saying, okay, I'm willing to make a decision to turn my will and my life over. I thought I would be the sheep amongst wolves if I were to do that. I am a wolf amongst wolves. You see, I thought I was a gangster. So, you know, and I thought, will of what, to what, how, what, and where. And what it was explained to me by my sponsors that when I make the decision to turn my will over is to say that I will do whatever it is that I'm afraid of and acquire the faith that it takes to get to the other side without using and without running in the other direction. That's how it was explained to me, and it's really been one of the greatest benefits of my recovery, because I know to do what I'm afraid of requires that I pray, I act on faith, and then all will be well on the other side. It will be what it's supposed to be. It may not look like I want it to, but it'll be what it's supposed to be. And then in the fourth step, we rely on a sponsor to guide us and support us and encourage us to pray before we do it. And in fifth, it talks about the awakening. As a result of the first four steps, we have an awakening of the spirit. It says the fifth step is a surgery of the spirit. A surgery of the spirit. That we share it with somebody, that we share it with God, that we become willing to endure the surgery and to begin the healing process that six and seven offers us. I personally did my fifth step, my first fifth step with a professional. And it says in our literature that it be somebody who understands what we do, that what it is we're trying to do. For me, I had sexual abuse issues. I didn't know how to share them with somebody. I didn't know how to even begin to talk about them. So I went to a professional who, because they are a professional, helped me begin to heal from that. It had nothing to do with the immediacy of my recovery or wanting to use or the steps of Narcotics Anonymous. I needed that, again, for more surgery on my human spirit, and consequently have done secondary ones with other sponsors. And in the seventh step, it talks again about it, having another awakening of the spirit, and that our sponsor hopefully will have tracked through our fourth step inventory and our sixth step what it is that stands in the way of our usefulness to God and others, and what it is that we need to have removed that blocks us from our recovery and our happiness. And that's, for me, when I, from that fourth and sixth step that I do with somebody, I try to make note of patterns and have that discussion of consistent patterns and behaviors and ask that person, you know, in step seven, are they humbly ready to have that shortcoming removed? No, I wasn't looking at the time. You're very good at that. and then, of course, in the ninth step, where it's the last step that it really talks, I mean, the 12th step where it talks about the awakening of the spirit, there's some things that I have learned from the 12th step about working with others and about being a sponsor and about my responsibilities as a sponsor that I would like to share with you. And that is, and if you're sponsoring somebody that's in a relationship jam, page 112 in the Working Step Guide, there's a complete instruction for it. If you would like to know whether you're in the right relationship, go to page 112 in the Working Step Guide. There's a whole paragraph on it. And see, as your sponsor, I can direct you there now, because what I learned from the 12th step is that I don't have to deal with that part of your life, because it says, there are, however, some basic guidelines that we as a fellowship have found to be helpful. First and foremost, we share our experience, strength, and hope. This means that we share our experience, not the theories we've heard from other sources. This also means that we share our own experience, not somebody else's. And if you hear nothing else I've said this morning, please hear this as you go on your journey of recovery and being a sponsee and a sponsor. It is not our job to tell someone seeking recovery where to work, who to live with, how to raise their children, or anything else outside the realm of our experience with recovery. I do not tell people who to get as a sponsor. I do not tell people who to love. It's not my business. It's not my job. And what it does for me is sets me up to be judgment, to be judging of you based on your choices. My only job as a member of this fellowship and as your sponsor is to say, please keep coming back, and how can I help you if I'm capable? It says that if I don't and can't find compassion for you, then I need to get with my sponsor, talk about it, and pray for compassion to have for you. You see, I don't tell people where to live, who to love, where to work, or any of those things, because that has nothing to do with recovery from addiction and my job in your life. And it eliminates a huge responsibility. But if you have to lie about where you live, who you're doing, what you do, how you raise your children, who you're loving, I would offer that it is in direct conflict with the spiritual principles of honesty, and that perhaps your recovery is in jeopardy. That's the only suggestion I give in that department. And if you come to me in your first year with lots of relationship chaos and headaches, I simply say, you cannot wear me out on that stuff. My job in your life is to help you with recovery from addiction. If you choose to be two flakes in a storm, have at it. Don't use over it. That's all I suggest, is that you don't use. But it's not my job to tell you who to love. If you walk through these doors and you are separated, it is not my job to tell you don't get in a relationship for a year. It's your marriage, for God's sake. It's not my business. You know, if you walk in here in an abusive relationship, I am not going to tell you not to make a decision in your first year. I'm not the one that's getting my face beat in. That's not my business. They have professionals to help people make those decisions. It's not mine. It relieves me of tremendous burden as your sponsor. My job is to guide you through the steps in recovery and to love you enough to be honest with you. And before I close, I would just like to read the last paragraph of the 12th step in the Working Step Guide that has been my experience and kind of sums up my experience, and to say that thank you for the committee for asking me to come and share. It's an incredible honor. Thank you to the women I sponsor, because I know that sponsees are only God's invitation for me to work the steps. That's why I put sponsees in your life, so you'll work the steps. And of course, and if you're, you know, like me, you don't want to be caught short without an answer. And I would just like to close with this. This is, of course, having had a spiritual awakening, which is the theme of the conference, as a result of these steps. We find ourselves joining society. We can do things that seemed beyond us before, exchanging hellos with a neighbor or the clerk at a local market, taking on positions of leadership in our communities, joining in social events with people who don't know we're addicts and not feeling less than. What a blessing. What a miracle. In fact, we may have looked with contempt upon such things in the past because we felt we'd never been able to fit in, but now we know we can, and I know I did. I looked upon you with contempt because I didn't feel I measured up. We become approachable. People may even seek out our advice and counsel on professional matters. when we think about where we've come from and what our recovery has brought to our lives, we can only be overwhelmed with gratitude. As it says in It Works, gratitude becomes the underlying force in all that we do. Our very lives can be an expression of our gratitude. It depends on how we choose to live it. Each one of us has something very special and unique to offer in gratitude. Thanks for letting me share today.